Hi, welcome to Not Another Marketing Podcast, where I'm talking to SEO expert Damon Burton about some of the biggest SEO myths. And there's lots of myths, lots and lots of myths in the SEO world. Thanks for listening. This is a fun episode. We can work out if some of the SEO stuff you've been doing for years is just a myth and you've been wasting your time for ages and ages. I'm chatting to Damon Burton, who writes for Forbes, has been featured in Entrepreneur Magazine, BuzzFeed, USA Weekly, and he's also written a free SEO book, which is called Outrank. And you can find the book and download it at freeseobook.com. That's freeseobook.com. Now, one thing I want to quickly mention before we get going is that Not Another Marketing Podcast is totally ad-free, and I'd love it if you could help me keep it that way by just giving the podcast a quick shout-out on social media or subscribing via your podcast app. You can also support the ad by buying me a coffee, and I drink a lot of coffee. Take a look at jtid.co.uk/podcasts. That's jtid.co.uk/podcasts. All these links are in the show notes of the podcast. Right, let's get on with it. So the first thing I asked Damon was, why are there so many myths surrounding SEO?
There are a handful of reasons that come to mind. One of them is that SEO is a little bit of an intangible thing, right? You know, you can't necessarily touch and feel it. And so that gives the opportunity for people to present whatever they want to present. And I think where you kind of marry that problem with, is that the fact that SEO takes a long time, and we can kind of maybe eventually talk about why it takes a long time, but the perfect combination of it taking a long time and being this mystical kind of thing gives the bad guys or the less ethical guys an opportunity to either pitch inaccuracies, or some people probably do it unintentionally and they just don't keep up with the times. And so they work on old strategies that just don't work anymore. And for one reason or another, they just haven't stayed current with their strategies.
Do you think there's too much being written about SEO online? So you search for something like, how long does my title tag have to be? And you get 96 different answers.
Yeah, well, that's certainly part of it. And, you know, that's a lot of what I write about in Forbes. And part of the reason why I did my book is like that exactly, to kind of clear up some of those myths. But, you know, what's funny is if you think about it, SEO guys are good at SEO. So when they write about these things, they stick forever. And there's all this information that's out there that may be outdated and inaccurate, but it was likely optimized sufficiently enough that it's still out there. And so it's important to pay attention to the timestamps on some of the information you read, because even though it sounds really fancy and legit, just it being 2 or 3 years old, not everything a couple years old is outdated, but there's a good chance that it is outdated the further back you go.
We're going to go through some of your favorite big myths in a second, but I want to give you my favorite big myth to start off with, it was probably about 5 or 6 years ago. Somebody said to me, a guy down the pub has told me that, this is true, that my keyword ratio needs to be 6.75%.
Yes. Yeah. So that term is keyword density. And so the concept is you need to repeat whatever your target is that you want to rank for over and over and over. And that certainly is a myth. It's obviously important to mention what your focus is, but search engines are smart enough nowadays to understand the core value and what you're presenting. So if you are excessive with the amount of times you say a word over and over and over, then it becomes a little bit unreadable to an actual human. And so Google starts to pay attention to the user experience and say, okay, well, if this doesn't read well, or if we're looking in our analytics and people come to a website and leave quickly because they're reading gibberish that's just keyword, 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 then it can actually do more harm than good. And yeah, you're dead on with what the rumored ratio used to be. It used to be 3 to 6%. And so what that means to the listeners is, if you had a piece of content that was 1,000 words long and you need to mention your target keyword that you want to rank for and monetize 3 to 6% of that. You have to mention that word 30 to 60 times. You can't tell me that you can naturally massage in a word 30 to 60 times without sounding ridiculous.
Oh, believe me, I've seen people try. Okay, right. So that's my favorite one out the way. What's your favorite?
Probably meta-keywords. That's one that just won't die. So meta-keywords is this little tag that you don't see visibly on a website, but it's in the code, and so search engines see it. And prior to Google coming along, so let's go give this a little bit of history. Prior to Google coming along, the old search engines would largely focus on this meta keyword tag. And so the people that own the websites and the webmasters would signal to search engines, this is what my website is about because I put in this tag, keyword one, keyword two, keyword three. And so then Yahoo and Lycos and these old browsers and search engines would then say, oh, okay, well, you know, John's website said it's about keyword one, two, and three, so we believe him. And that's part of what would influence rankings. Well, obviously, when you give somebody access to something that they can monetize, they're going to abuse it. And so people started just stuffing keywords in there, even keywords that were completely unrelated, just because they wanted traffic. And so even if it wasn't targeted traffic, it was, let's just see if we can show up for words that have a lot of traffic. So Google comes along and says, you know, this is getting beat up pretty bad. So let's be, when they were the new kids on the block, they said, let's do things a little bit differently. And let's look at something that webmasters are less likely to manipulate. And that's backlinks, which is when another website links to your website. So that was kind of the core of when Google came onto the scene, why their results were better and faster, because they used these less manipulated, more accurate signals. Well, over time, you know, Google, when they started, they may have used meta keywords a little bit as well. And then all the other search engines certainly used meta keywords, but they don't anymore. And it's actually documented. There's a video from Google's former head of search, Matt Cutts, way back in 2009. And in 2009, he says, no, we don't use it. And that's even just when they admitted it. So it may have been even before that. So here we are 11 years later, and people are still saying that you need to use meta keywords. It just makes no sense at all.
Do you think it'd help if some of the content management systems took the box out of the...
Yeah, most of them have. I mean, WordPress has. There are a handful of platforms, more on the commerce side, that still have meta keyword tags as an option. WordPress doesn't even have it, but if you install the popular plugin Yoast, by default, it's turned off. And then it has a checkbox that says, do you really want to turn this on? Why?
Yeah, that's a good plan, actually. So forget about the meta keyword tag. If you see that box anywhere, just don't put anything in it.
Yep. Save your time.
Okay, so another myth. Let's have another one.
Buying ad space. Pay-per-click and paying for an ad position on Google is completely independent of organic results. And some people have this conception that if you bid a little more on paid ads, then Google is going to return the favor and bump you up higher in the organic non-paid results. And they have absolutely nothing to do with each other. Some people think that you can just straight up pay Google to rank higher. And then other people kind of, I think they're just a little more ignorant and they're just not familiar with the concepts. And they go, well, don't I just do this thing and turn it on? No. And then other people think it's a manipulative game and say, well, I know that they don't say it, but I've noticed it. And there's been study after study after study that there's no correlation to paid ads versus your position on non-paid results.
We've got to talk about backlinks at some point, haven't we? Because the more backlinks, the better, right? You know, we go out where we get thousands and thousands of links. It doesn't matter where they're from.
No, yeah. You know, you hit it right on by saying, you know, it doesn't matter the relevance. So there's... It used to be, yeah, but that changed in 2012. In 2012, Google had an algorithm called Penguin. And prior to that algorithm update, it largely was a quantity game. And there's software that exists, and I'm sure it still exists, it just doesn't really work anymore. But there's software where you could go in and automate or semi-automate your ability for you to go out and ping all these websites and just insert your link. So a popular example was what was called directory websites. And the websites existed surely for the purpose of you inserting a link. So if you think about it, no real person is ever going to use that. Like, I'm not going to go to a directory and click on category A and then go filter through subcategories B through Z and then click on those subcategories. I mean, that's what Google's for. You just type in what you want and find it. So they serve no real purpose other than just being an asset to leverage for an SEO effort to try and acquire a backlink. And there's other ways people would, you know, if there was a message board or a forum, then you'd have a software program that would register an account and create a dummy profile, and in the bio of the profile it'd insert a link. And so there's all these different ways that you could scale and automate backlinks. And then, as we talked earlier about the history of Google coming onto the scene, backlinks were super valuable, and they still are, but it's after that algorithm update, it changed from a quantity play to a quality play. So just nearly instantly after that Penguin algorithm, it shifted, and then all of those, you know, the concept of quantity just went out the window. So, you know, you actually mentioned thousands of backlinks, and that's pretty accurate. Prior to 2012, you could do thousands of backlinks per month per website through this automated process. And now, ideally, it's largely a manual process. There are some ways to semi-automate the filtering and screening of looking for opportunities, but ideally, once you identify these websites where you have a potential link opportunity, then you go and manually engage. But you used to, in the time that you used to spend to automate thousands of links, now you still spend the same amount of hours or days per month, and you're more lucky to get 10. Because now it's about quality and relevance. And so it's better to have links from websites that are related to your industry than hundreds or thousands of links from a website that is low quality or is completely off topic to what your industry is.
What about things like reciprocal links and the old-fashioned link exchange, which used to happen a lot? Does that matter anymore?
Not so much. You know, that's not something that me or my team ever participate in. I think there's probably a gray area where you might be able to get away with it, but eventually where it does more harm than good is if you create a pattern, like a footprint. And so once a footprint's established where Google can see, well, John's site continually has his link quantity is increasing, but we also notice that as the quantity increases, the correlation to how many other websites he reciprocally links to also increases at a similar rate. And so once you create a pattern, or if you start exchanging links with other people that go out and exchange links at scale, so you become guilty by association, once that pattern is identified by search engines, then they can end up penalizing you. So there's certainly an opportunity for some short-term gains, but I don't know at what point that risk is worth long-term punishment.
There's been too much written about links as well, hasn't there, on the internet, which is just confusing as well, I think.
Yeah, links is definitely one of the sexier topics in the SEO world, and so there's nonstop content put out about that.
Okay, well, another myth. Give me another one.
Keyword stuffing, you know, kind of we touched on that earlier with just shoving content over and over and over, or repurposing content without having a new angle or a value proposition. So a lot of times we'll call it spinning. And what that is taking a piece of content, and there's spinning programs, they call it article spinners. And you take your article, paste it in there, or you steal somebody else's and paste it in there. And what these spinner programs do is they go in and they shuffle around the paragraphs and they swap out words with synonyms. And so that's why a lot of times you don't see them as much anymore, because Google's starting to catch on to the poor reading quality. But I'm sure we've all seen these articles or blog posts where you're reading it and it has a consistent topic, but you start to question the education level of the person that wrote it, because the grammar gets worse and worse and worse. And what that was some sort of automated approach where there was a source piece of content that was just spun around and shuffled around, and then exported and posted live for an attempt to, you know, game the system based on duplicating content.
And you could be reading these articles and then suddenly out of nowhere, there's just like a little phrase which links to a plastic surgeon.
Yeah. You know what? That's funny you catch on to that, because those are usually those signify what's called a PBN, a private blog network. And what these PBNs are is somebody or a group of somebodies have gone in and set up several hosting accounts across different providers on different servers with different IP addresses. And what they do is they put up content to establish a website that hopefully looks real to search engines. And then once they establish that credibility, then they go back and start inserting links or selling them or exchanging them. And you can usually tell by one of two ways. One is exactly as you said, you're reading a piece of content, it's just fine. And then all of a sudden there's something completely off topic for one sentence and then it goes back to normal. And you're like, what just happened? Or you look at content and the website is, you look at the website and it's very templated. You know, it doesn't look very original. It looks like the same as a million other sites you've seen. And then you go click on the About Us or contact page and there's nothing there. Like there's no identifiable information about it. Or if you look at the homepage, all of a sudden, you know, you may be reading an article about automotive stuff. And then you go to the homepage and all of a sudden there's articles about dental cleanings. Yeah. And it's just completely off topic.
What about domain authority? Now, I've heard this mentioned to me quite a bit over the last few years. Probably only the last 2 or 3 years, to be honest with you, a lot. But there's been a lot of people saying, I've got to increase my domain authority. My DA number needs to go up. I even had an agency contact me once and said that their client had said, we need our DA number to go up because Google will list us higher. We'll get more results. Is this right?
Not so much. So the word domain authority came because the SEO industry needed a replacement for the term PageRank. So Google had a measurement, a metric that would rank a website's quality from 0 to 10. And so, you know, Wikipedia and Facebook are a 10 because it's based on traffic and quality content, things like that. And so a brand new website's a 0, and, you know, some reputable site, but it's kind of in the, you know, Walmart, maybe like an 8. And so what happened is Google said, all right, we're going to retire the PageRank metric. And so they just stopped updating it. And so there are tools out there that'll still try and ping and tell you what the PageRank is, but it hasn't been updated in years. And so then the SEO community said, well, crap, how do we know how to identify what websites to target to get those backlinks? Or how do we partner up to exchange those links? How do we qualify these websites now? So they had to come up with a metric that they could continue to use. And so there's nothing wrong with the metric, but we talked earlier about the importance of relevance when you get links or you have mentions in what's called citations from other websites. It's more important to have 10 relevant links and 100 irrelevant links. So the same kind of concept applies to DA, domain authority. If you're a local photographer, your website will never have the value of Facebook. So if we compare that to the old PageRank metric, if Facebook is a 10 and your website is a 2, then exchange, work out links, acquire links, you know, build relationships with other websites that are also 1 through 4. That are based on photography. So the theory that you only have to go for high domain authority relationships is inaccurate because based on your industry, it is unlikely that you will only have high domain authority relationships anyway.
So does Google pay attention to these SEO tools, domain authority?
No, Google doesn't. I mean, there's some overlap in the concepts of how the websites are valued, but no, Google isn't going to use a third party's metric. Like a lot of these metrics come from Moz, which is a popular SEO software. And so Google's not going to go, oh, yeah, we need to pay attention to Moz's metrics and then work that into our algorithm.
So the theory of my domain authority has gone up 5 points does not necessarily going to correlate with I'm going to get more sales and more traffic from Google.
No, not necessarily. And I think most people that consider domain authority look at it a little bit different. They look at, okay, how do we build relationships and get links from other high DA sites more so than their own DA? Certainly, you know, a lot of them are going to say, I want to hire DA, but I think the majority of the conversations are the other way around, where it's like, how do we get links from the other high DA sites?
Okay, give me another myth. Go on. What's a good one?
Probably, you know, backlink relevancy. A backlink is a backlink. So there's a lot of different things, and we've kind of touched on some of these. So we've talked about the quantity and relevancy, but the other thing that we can talk about is what's called link velocity. So Google will pay attention to how quickly, your quantity of backlinks increases over time. And so there's kind of a myth on two sides of this. There is some truth on both sides of this. So one conversation is, well, don't acquire backlinks too quickly. So part of that is true. Part of it's true because if you are attempting to manipulate your link quantity through, you know, automated processes, yeah, if you go too quickly, you're probably going to get dinged because Google's going to say, well, John's website only had 10 backlinks last month, and then 20, you know, 10 backlinks a couple months ago, 20 the next month, 200 the month that followed, and 5,000 the month after that. So that's a little unrealistic for the velocity to scale that quickly. But at the same time, if you focus on good quality content, providing good value to your readers, and if you go viral, then that doesn't matter. If they're legit and you genuinely get 5,000 links in a month because you put out a compelling piece of content, then that's fine. So I don't think there's a black and white statement to be made for link velocity. It really depends on the quality of how those links were acquired.
Do you think Google can tell the difference between the viral thing and the I've built it all myself?
Yeah, there's patterns to everything. So they certainly have the technological advancements to measure those patterns. So if there's 5,000 links that come in from low quality websites and zero traffic that comes along with the increase in backlinks, then that's a high probability that those are manipulated backlinks. But if all of a sudden you get backlinks from respectable outlets, or if you go viral and news media publications are linking to you and that brings traffic with it because people are clicking through to the article because the source where the link is originates from has a high source of traffic and they're passing some of that value to you. I mean, there's patterns to everything, so it's certainly identifiable.
I was working with a client a few years ago. They were a tiny little workshop, really, just made a tiny little product. And they, without knowing, they didn't know at all, but their PR company had got them on a huge TV show in the UK. And suddenly, out of absolutely nowhere, within a few weeks, they were everywhere, national press, local press, and they were a little bit worried. Their SEO person was actually a little bit worried at the speed at which all these backlinks were being created. But you're saying that doesn't necessarily matter because Google can spot what the real ones are compared to the homemade ones.
Yeah, you look at the overall reputation of where these inbound links and traffic are coming from. So if it's the good guy sending some love your way, then Google knows that historically those sites are good guys. But if it's a bunch of low quality websites that Google historically knows doesn't have traffic, I mean, Google gives you the great tool analytics that gives you all these insights, but through the course of them giving you that tool, they're housing that data too. So it's very easy for them to look at the reputation of a website and say, okay, is this a good or a bad website that John's getting a bunch of references from?
So that comes to another thing, I suppose. Does Google look at the traffic information and the data it collects in Google Analytics to work out the rankings? Because some say no, some say yes.
They're going to pay attention to everything. I mean, you are the product. So, of course, Google is going to look at the data. That is the core reason why they provide these free products, because if you're not paying for it, then you are the source of their income. So, you know, one example would be what's called a bounce rate. So if you go and look in your analytics, then it's going to tell you if people abandon your website quickly or they stick around longer. And so you can look at which website has a better or worse bounce rate. Well, of course, Google's going to pay attention to that because then they can say, well, if it's a high bounce rate, that implies that it's a low quality website because people aren't finding what they want. So if it's a low quality website, we don't want to send people to it.
Do you think Google's clever enough to realize, say, informational websites, for example, because it could be that you've got a really high bounce rate because your website is information based and somebody's done a search, they found you, they've got the information they need, and then they go away.
For sure. Yeah. So it's all, I think it's silly when some people say that there's a general rule for every website in every industry. I think it largely varies by the industry. And the reason I give is exactly what you just gave out, is that it depends on, you know, if whatever you offer is informational and you can solve a person's problem in 30 seconds and then people bounce in 30 seconds, then that's a fair bounce. But if you are a website that's based on, you know, historical information and you want to go read for an hour at a time because you're understanding you know, different things that happened in World War One, that's going to take a long time to read. So if there's other informational websites about that same topic, then your bounce rate should be relative to those other comparable websites.
What about submitting your website to Google? You have to do that, don't you? You have to fill in a form and tell them where your website is.
No, not anymore. There used to be a tool where you would do exactly that. You go and type in your URL and submit it. So if you had a new blog or a new commerce website or new any website, you'd go there and say, hey, Google, I have a new website. Because otherwise, until you start getting links, it wouldn't find it. Because that's how Google crawls these pages, is it follows the link, crawls it and says, what else is on here? What other text? What other links? And then it follows those links and then repeats. So nowadays, what you do is there's no longer that submission tool. I suppose there's kind of an indirect way. Google's pretty smart enough that it's going to see IPs and domains that are registered and on servers. And so it's probably going to find it anyway. But if you set up a Google Search Console account, which is free, then you're going to get some more insights into the performance of your website. But then via submitting that, then Google also identifies it. So just the direct tool for submitting a website no longer exists. And where you see this float around still is a lot of times you'll have these spammy SEO agencies that send out bulk emails that say, hey, submit your website to Google. And so it's just a sales tactic where they say, one-time thing for $99 and we'll submit you to Google. Well, you can do it for free in 5 minutes.
Yeah, I remember there were a lot of submission services in the UK where you'd pay like £250 and you'd get they'd submit you to Google, and it was kind of like, well, you just wasted your money, really. So,
yeah.
And you mentioned a little bit earlier about your book, your free SEO book. Tell me about it.
Yeah, I wrote the book primarily for two reasons. One is to give kind of the little guys a fighting chance, because SEO it's not a super complicated concept once you understand what the core concepts are, but it is time consuming. You have to build a process out of it. So I wanted to kind of give the business owners and webmasters that maybe not have a budget for it the opportunity to make some progress on their own. Or on the other side of things, I wanted to give people that are exploring hiring an agency good ammunition to go into a conversation and identify the good guys from the bad guys. And so it was a fun process to write and take my 13 years of SEO experience and my collective 20 years of design experience and then just condense it in. And it, you know, what's funny is I think the first sentence in the book is along the lines of, let's be honest, the topic of SEO doesn't sound like a sexy topic to write a book about. So I tried to start it with some entertaining stories about how I got into it. And before I had an agency, I beat a billion-dollar company and outranking them, and just like these fun things to show real world examples of how the little guys can do it. And then I transition into, okay, once I learned that, then I had then I said, okay, I have something here, let's do something with it. And then I walked through the process of how I scaled an agency. And then the further it gets into the book, it gives just a real clear roadmap of the exact same principles and concepts that I do with my SEO national company, and just simplified into like general guidelines that anybody should be able to take and use.
And where can we find the book?
You can buy it on Amazon, or right now I'm doing free digital copies on freeseobook.com. There's no upsells or anything. You know, I might send you an email or two later, just touching base. But other than that, it's just free download right there on the next page.
And whereabouts can we find you, Damon, around the internet, your social media bits?
Yeah, Facebook and LinkedIn are my platforms of choice. You will not find me on TikTok or a handful of the other ones.
Nor me.
Yeah, so Facebook and LinkedIn is where I'm at.
Really appreciate your time. Love talking about SEO myths because there's so many of them. And thank you for spending some time. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate the engagement. Thanks for the opportunity to chat.
Enjoyed that one. Thanks again to Damon for his time. Now, if you've enjoyed this episode of Not Another Marketing Podcast, then please help me keep it ad-free. You can subscribe on your favorite podcast player, or you can give it a quick shout on social media. That's much appreciated. And you can also buy me a coffee, because I basically live on lots of coffee. Head over to jtid.co.uk/podcasts. That's jtid.co.uk/podcasts. Thanks for listening.